बहूनाम इह कर्मिनाम शास्त्रत्वं उपचारो हि यथा मंडलं वर्चिनम किंतु शास्त्रे बहुत्वे स्याद् बहूनाम इह कर्मिनाम शास्त्रत्वं उपचारो हि यथा मंडलं वर्चिनम किंतु शास्त्रे बहुत्वे स्याद् बहूनाम इह कर्मिनाम शास्त्रत्वं उपचारो हि यथा मंडलं वर्चिनम किंतु but शास्त्रेर of governors or judges बहुत्वे in the plurality स्यात् there may be बहूनाम of many iha in this world कर्मिनाम persons performing actions शास्त्रत्वं departmental management upachara administration he indeed yata just like mandala vartinam of the departmental heads so this translation for Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada ki jai translation the yamadutas continue since there are many different karmis or workers There may be different judges or rulers to give them justice, but just as one central emperor controls different departmental rulers, there must be one supreme controller to guide all the judges. Purport. In governmental management, there may be departmental officials to give justice to different persons, but the law must be one, and that central law must control everyone. The Yamadutas cannot imagine that two judges would give two different verdicts in the same case, and therefore they wanted to know who the central judge is. The Yamadutas were certain that Ajamil was a most sinful man. But although Yamaraj wanted to punish him, the Vishnudutas excused him. This was a puzzling situation that the Yamadutas wanted Yamaraj to clarify. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So the context of this chapter is that after that life-changing Bhagavatam class that Ajamil experienced, life-changing Bhagavatam class, many of us can't say that we have Bhagavatam classes that are life-changing. Of course, if you have the Yamaduta standing over you, it might give great impetus for a life-changing discussion. Now that life-changing Bhagavatam class, the Yamadutas were dismissed. They couldn't take Ajamil. So Shukadeva Goswami told that the Yamadutas went back to make a report to Yamaraj that this had taken place. So this chapter, Parashri Maharaj inquires about that. What did they report to Yamaraj? So in this first section of chapter 3, it basically only has two sections. One section is question of the Yamadutas. The next section is Yamaraj's answers. Understand? So Yamadutas have basically about three questions that they are about to pose. Are posing to Yamaraj. Three questions. Understand? Michael, understand? Spacing out. Yeah, caught it, saw it. I can see everything from over here. Three questions Yamadutas have. First question you already heard and discussed. The first question was, how many controllers are there to give the results of people's actions in the modes of nature? Understand? All living entities in this world are impelled to activity influenced by one of the modes of nature, isn't it? Either goodness, and goodness, they perform virtuous activities, and passion, they perform exploitative activities, and ignorance, they perform destructive activities. Understand? Due to the influence of the modes, we are all impelled to certain types of activities, virtuous, exploitative, or destructive, isn't it? Now, who is the controller that will give the results of those activities under the various modes of nature? Are there many controllers, or is there one ultimate controller? That's the question. Understand? Because you do some type of activity, then there must be someone to give you the result of that activity. Understand? It's not happening by mechanism alone. Karma is not just a mechanistic thing. There's an entity who's giving the results of the activities. Understand? So are there many controllers, or is there one controller? And then they further expand on that point, that if there are many controllers that disagree, like democracy, if there are many controllers that disagree, then either everyone would be wrongly punished or rewarded, or neither punished or rewarded. Understand? Because everyone has disagreement, like democracy. Like some particular issue is coming up, and you bring together a group of persons, and none of them agree with each other. Then finally, how you make a decision? Either someone will be wrongly punished or wrongly rewarded, or neither punished or rewarded. So this system will be flawed. Understand? There's a flawed system. Democracy and such is a flawed system because you're not dealing with you're not dealing with perfect individuals. So it will be inherently flawed. Prabhupada loves Nixon as his man in most of his lectures, how the people voted in Nixon and then they had to pull him out. You know, we hear Nixon's name a lot. I guess he gets a lot of benefit. Prabhupada uses that. Nixon is Prabhupada's man. So because people are imperfect, if they have to make judgments, they will disagree. Then people will be wrongly punished or rewarded, or neither punished or rewarded. This is a flawed system. So there can be many controllers. Understand? This first point that they're making. Understand? Understand? This is the first point, that question that they're having. How many controllers are there to give the living entities results in the modes of nature? And I think Prabhupada is already pointing out that internally, they were a little bit kind of mad with Yamaraj. Because if you're supposed to be the supreme controller, according to our understanding, and your order has just been thwarted, so what is the use of a master like you? It's just like if you're a police officer and you go to arrest someone, and then anyone can just thwart your authority like that. No one will follow your authority. Then you say, what is the use of the government? Actually, many countries have this problem. Many countries have this problem, right? What is the use of the I'm a police officer has no meaning? So they were a little bit upset, but the reason for their anger is they had a misconception about the position of Yamaraj. And therefore, when Yamaraj wasn't able to meet the expectations of that conception, then they became frustrated. They became angry with him. Understand? This happens all the time, actually. All the time this is happening. We have certain conceptions of individuals' positions, and with those conceptions come certain expectations that we think they should be able to meet. Huh? Just like, for example, someone is a guru. So at least in Gaudiya conception, the position of guru is very exalted conception is there. So we have certain expectations that come with our conception of what a guru is or a guru is supposed to be. And if someone is not meeting that expectation, in other words, if someone has imposed that conception on them wrongly and is not actually proper conception, then the person is not able to meet that expectation, then you become upset, isn't it? This happens all the time, isn't it? You understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying? You understand? Sean, understand? So this happens all the time. So they were a little bit upset with Yamaraj because they had imposed a conception of his authority onto Yamaraj, a position that he was not actually in. And because he was not able to meet the expectation of that falsely imposed conception, they became angry. This happens all the time. Understand? So you need to have proper conception of authority. So Yamaraj will have to explain it. That was the first question. Understand? Second question. Second question is today's verse. Second question is that, okay, even if there are many controllers, because there are many karmis, bahunam iha karminam, many materialistic workers who are working in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance, mostly passion, ignorance, exploitative activities, destructive activities. Understand? Many karmis are like that. So when you have so many karmis, you need departments to control so many people, isn't it? Just like when Jamasmi comes, we have so many departments are there to control. Okay, there's a department for controlling the people who want to help out with cutting the vegetables. There's a group of devotees who will govern the line control, and a group of devotees who will govern the kirtan control, and so many things. You have many departments to control many people. That may be true. That makes sense. You need many controllers to control many people. But there must be one central controller above all of them. As Prabhupada's putting the language here in the purport, there should be one law above them all that they all follow and that they're all controlled by. Otherwise, it'll be a free-for-all. Anyone will do anything they want. If there isn't, okay, the karmis anyway will do anything they want. That is natural. So you have so many controllers above them. But then amongst those controlling entities, there should be one central law, one central controller above all of them. Otherwise, it will again lead to confusion and mayhem, destruction, anarchy. Understand? So they want to know. So the question, the implied question is, who is that one supreme controller? Who is that autocrat in which all the other smaller controllers, smaller departmental heads are under? And of course, they've assumed that that was Yamaraj. So therefore, they're frustrated. Because if you're the autocrat, the one creator of the law that controls everyone, that law which controls everyone, then how is it that these personalities, very beautiful personalities, are able to thwart your authority? So then that is your second question, the implication of the second question. Who is the one central autocrat amongst all the smaller controllers? Understand? Two questions. Any questions? That's today's verse. That's the verse purport. Any questions about this? Okay, second. We'll move on then. Text number 8 or 7 doesn't have any purport. Anyway, we'll go through it. Atastvam eko bhutanam sheshwara namadhishvara shasta dhandadharo nirnam shubha shubha vivechana. So, translation, the supreme judge must be one, not many. It was our understanding that you are that supreme judge and that you have jurisdiction even over the demigods. Our impression was that you are the master of all living entities, the supreme authority who discriminates between the pious and pious activities of all human beings. So then, now they've plainly expressed their misconception to Yamaraj. That we thought that you were the controller of all living entities. Tvam eko bhutanam, the one controller of all living entities. Adishwaraha, the master of them all. Sheshwaranam means the master of the demigods, including the demigods, your control over them also. Shashta, you're the supreme ruler. Dandadaro, nirnam, able to give punishment in the human society. Shubha, ashubha, vivechanaha. And you are the one who discriminates, vivek. You use your discrimination to determine what is auspicious, what is inauspicious, and reward people accordingly. So they've plainly expressed their misconception. Understand? Sometimes that would be good. Sometimes we do have misconceptions of the person. We should plainly express it. Then they can say, oh, no, no, no. That is not my position. So they've plainly done that in this verse. Next verse. Tasya te virito dhando na loke vartate dhuna na chatubhir abhutai siddhair agnate viparlambhita. Translation. But now we see that the punishment ordained under your authority is no longer effective, since your order has been transgressed by four wonderful and perfect persons, abhutai siddhair. Wonderful and perfect. Well, they're not envious. They're just a little upset. Purport. The Yamadutas had been under the impression that Yamaraj was the only person in charge of administering justice. They were fully confident that no one could counteract his judgments, but now, to their surprise, his order had been violated by the four wonderful persons from Siddha Loka. The Vishnu Dutas. Any questions? Everyone understand? Yeah. Yeah, sometimes Siddha Loka means Vaikuntha. Brahma Loka also refers to spiritual world sometimes also, as it sometimes also refers to Lord Brahma's planet. Yes.
They thought Yamaraj was the Supreme Personality Godhead?
Basically.
It's like, was it New Testament God or Old Testament God?
I don't know. It's not important. New Testament, God, Old Testament. They don't have things like that in Vedic culture. Any other questions? New Testament, God, Old Testament, God. Text 9. Niyamanam tavadeshad. Asmabhir yatana grihan. Vyamochayan patakinam. Chitwa pashan prasahyate. I'm cutting the ropes by force there. Translation, we were bringing the most sinful ajamil toward the hellish planets. Patika. What is that? Patakinam. Most sinful. Pop. Pop means sin. The drink that would pop. Pop means sin. They're pop, maha pop. Ati pop, understand? Pop means sin. And maha pop, very sinful. Ati pop, extremely sinful. So he was most sinful. We were bringing him, taking him to hell, following your order. When those beautiful persons from Siddhaloka forcibly cut the knots of the robes which we were arresting him. Chitwa pashan prasayate. Chitwa pashan, to cut the ropes. That we were dragging him to hell, but they came and forcibly cut the ropes. So what is this business? Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that the Yamadutas wanted to bring the Vishnudutas before Yamaraj. If Yamaraj could then have punished the Vishnudutas, the Yamadutas would have been satisfied. Yes, so they've transgressed your order, now punish them. And if you punish them, we'll be happy. Otherwise, what type of authority are you? What type of authority are you? You cannot punish them. Then what type of authority? Why we should follow you? That's what they're saying. Next verse. Tam ste veditum ichchamo. Te veditum ichchamo. Yadi no manyase kshamam. Naraya netya bihite. Sorry. Madhair ityaya yur drutam. Translation, as soon as the sinful ajamil uttered the name Narayana, these four beautiful men immediately arrived and reassured him, saying, do not fear, do not fear. How irritating. The police come to arrest a sinful person, and someone comes and just knocks the handcuffs out of his hand and tells the person, do not fear. How irritating. Especially if you consider yourself representative of the government, the authority. Or like the temple commander comes down and tells you, wash the pots, and then some other fellow says, do not fear, do not fear. You don't have to do anything. He's like, yes. Now how irritating that would be, isn't it? You can understand, irritating. So they're a little irritated. As soon as Ajamil uttered the name of Narayana, these men appeared and said, do not fear, do not fear. We wish to know about them from your lordship. If you think we are able to understand them, kindly describe who they are. So this is the third question. Third question, who are these personalities that transgressed your authority? Very wonderful, abhutai, perfect, siddhir, beautiful. They use flattering language. We'd probably be less conscious than them in this case. So Purport, the order carriers of Yamaraj, being very much aggrieved because of their defeat by the four Vishnudutas, wanted to bring them before Yamaraj and, if possible, punish them. Otherwise, they desired to commit suicide. Two options. Understand? Two options. Either you punish them or we commit suicide. Two options. I wonder how Yamaduta can commit suicide. Interesting. Before pursuing either course, however, they wanted to know about the Vishnudutas from Yamaraj, who was also omniscient. But before we do anything, can you tell us who they were? Third question. So three questions Yamadutas asked. Now answers are coming. Are there any questions? Probably comes in one of the commentaries. Yeah. Vartak Prabhu.
Are there a lot of interventions like this with the Vishnudutas in the universe? Does this take place a lot?
Presumably. It was mentioned earlier on in chapter 2, I believe, that the Vishnudutas are always there to protect Vaishnavas. But this type of intervention doesn't happen much because, as we'll learn from this chapter, Yamaraj is going to tell them, you better not go to anyone who's chanting the holy name of Krishna. And anyone who is worshiping Krishna, you better not go near them. So this type of intervention wouldn't happen so much. But intervention is always taking place. And also, if you consider the point that Vaishnavas, even in corporeal bodies that we can see and touch, they are also called as Vishnu Dutas. And they have intervened in our lives, is it not? So many devotees have intervened in our life and helped us come to Krishna consciousness. Devotees are also Vishnu Dutas. Srila Prabhupada is Vishnu Duta. Understand? Krishna Duta. Vishnu Duta, Krishna Duta. He intervened in the lives of so many individuals by which they are coming to Krishna and his followers, and they also are constantly intervening in the lives of individuals. So, yes, this intervention is constantly taking place. In that sense, this type of intervention, no, because Yamaraj tells them not to go near the Vaishnavas. Yeah, okay, then.
Yeah. Here is one thing, very nice point, that otherwise they wanted to commit suicide. So that on that point, when in the process of arguments, if you cannot defeat, suppose somebody is offending your, you know, guru, this scripture mentions that.
Yes, of course, that isn't exactly applicable to the Yamadutas here. Because they don't want to commit suicide so much because Yamaraj's authority was transgressed. They want to commit suicide because he couldn't do anything about it. So it's a little bit different. And context is a little bit different. Because their concern is more that Yamaraj wasn't able to punish them. Or if he was able to punish them, then fine, you are bona fide authority. But if you cannot give any punishment to them, then we will commit suicide. Two options. So their concern is not so much about their spiritual master here or being offended. It's more about themselves. Why am I serving such a useless authority like you? That is their mentality here. So, Amalhadini Shakti, you wanted to ask something.
I was just remembering a story that there was a dying man and Badrinarayan Prabhu came to see him and said that, okay, whatever happens, you just take shelter of Vishnu. And this man went into a coma for a long time, and when he came out of the coma, he said his relatives were there and doctors and everybody else, and he said they came three times, he said like that. And then everybody was like, yeah, we came three times, we came to see you were dying. He's like, no, they came three times, and then they were still saying like, yeah, we came to see you were going to die. And he says, no, the ugly ones, they came three times. So he says that he told them that he told the Yamadutas, I'm taking shelter of Vishnu.
And then they're like,
and
damn.
Actually, this man was not, he was not a devotee. He was like totally not interested. But just because, what I heard from the person that told this story is that because Badrinarayan Prabhu came, he just inspired this man that you just take shelter of Vishnu, whatever happens. But he was not interested at all. He was not practicing, like nothing. Yeah. Just at the last minute, he's just decided to take shelter of Vishnu. And
lucky him. I think this is an actual, doctors recognize this as a type of medical condition where people who are just about to die, they kind of, it's been documented, I think, many persons who say they see ugly man coming for them and so on. They just relegate it to some type of psychosis or something that happens at the time of death. But the devotees, we know that something else is going on. They're getting a special visit from the Yamadutas, huh? No. Yeah, Vishnudas are, Yamadutas are scary. Copper faces. They look like vampires and werewolves and so on. They're scary.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I was thinking Yamdutas were angry with Ajamil.
Yamaraj.
And also with Yamaraj. And
they aren't angry with Ajamil as such. They were disturbed by the Vishnu Dutas and Yamaraj. Because Vishnu Dutas, because they transgressed their duty of arresting Ajamil. And Yamaraj, because he didn't do anything about it. So there's not so much Ajamil, more Vishnu Dutas, Yamaraj. Any other questions? So three questions Yamadutas asks, understand? What are the three questions? First question. Yes, Terrence, Prabhu.
Is there more than one controller that decides people's fate or karma?
Yes, good. Second question, someone else. Michael, second question.
Supreme controller?
Who's supreme controller? Very good. Third question. Come on, the third one is like the easiest one. Yeah, who are these four beautiful, wonderful, perfected personalities? Three questions they asked, huh?
I was thinking that this point you made very nicely about when you put false expectations upon authorities and if they don't meet up to
Well, you have false conceptions.
False conceptions.
And then those false conceptions come with the false expectations, and then they can't meet those, then become frustrated.
So I feel like this happens in our devotional life is when we have struggles or and ups and downs, then we think that our authorities shouldn't have allowed us to experience that or somehow it's their fault. That seems to be a slightly different situation that's happening in the case of the Yamadutas. Could you explain the one?
What do you mean it seems slightly different case?
Because in the Yamadutas case, you know, they were just performing their duty. They were just going to go retrieve some conditioned soul. But they weren't aware of some higher conception, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas in our case, I feel like sometimes we have a tendency to, according to our false conception, expect certain things from our authorities. It's actually our prerogative. Do you know what I'm saying? But I'm not exactly clear on, you know, kind of like where to draw the line. Like, okay, this is the part that I have to work on. This is what we can expect from them. And this is the part that I have to work on. I guess that's my question.
Well, in the case of the Yamadutas, they were disturbed because they were trying to carry out their duty, as you say. And they were stopped from doing so. And they thought that Yamaraj should be able to punish them because he's a supreme authority. And because Yamaraj wasn't able to do so, they became upset. The other situation, your scenario you're saying is also the same. Means we don't understand what is our position, let's say as disciples or subordinates, what is our duty and what is the duty of the spiritual master. Sometimes people think that the duty of the spiritual master, for example, is to pamper them. Just like when you go to a math teacher, what do you expect to get from a math teacher? You expect to learn math, isn't it? If you go to a chemistry teacher, what do you expect to learn? Chemistry, isn't it? If you go to a history teacher, what do you expect to learn? Stupid histories, isn't it? U.S. history, European history, these classes I took in high school, useless. And then if you go to a spiritual master, what do you expect? To be pampered. Does it make any sense? You expect gurus should be able to be there for my every emotional need. Guru's business is to give transcendental knowledge, as Krishna is giving in Bhagavad Gita. And he gives transcendental knowledge, he has done his duty, actually. He's told Chan Hare Krishna, you have questions about how to get, I have any doubts about the philosophy, about how to apply these things that you've taught. So then he gives answers to those types of questions and so on. But spiritual master's business is not to sit there and pamper you ad infinitum for all your emotional issues, which are anyway appearing and disappearing like the summer and winter seasons. So a spiritual master will tell, Tom Tatiksu Sabarita, next question. And we feel hurt. What is this? You're so unconcerned about me. Spiritual master says, Tom Tatiksu Sabarita, you tolerate because there's like the appearance and disappearance of summer and winter season. So he covers all of those types of emotional problems in one verse. Now, do you have any questions about the philosophy, you know, and how to apply that? That's the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. One verse, Krishna covers all the emotional issues. Tamcha Chikusabharata, you have uncontrolled mind senses. Manushashtani Indriyani Pakritistani Karshati. Next verse. Finished in one verse, Krishna covers all these sorts of issues. But because I strongly identify with the bodily platform, and I'm willing to relinquish our identification with it, we generally tend to go to spiritual authorities looking for that emotional support. And in fact, we take the emotional support as evidence of their care. That is what it means for them to love us and so on. I'm not saying that that element may not be there, but that's not exactly the duty of spiritual master. Duty of spiritual master to give spiritual knowledge. You know, and the emotional thing, they have other professions for that called psychiatry. You can go to a psychiatrist and they have one nice chairs there. You can sit back in the chair and go through all your emotional problems, and they'll sit there and pretend to hear you and prescribe some life-threatening medicine. After they go through that, after they hear from you, then they also go and see their psychiatrist. This is a situation of material masters. Spiritual master gives spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding. So out of all the misconceptions we may have about the Guru, this seems to be the one that most impacts us the most. A lot of the times you see in the Shastras how spiritual authorities kind of in and out. They in, they give the spiritual knowledge, and they bounce. And it's up to the individual to internalize that knowledge and make use of it. That is the meaning. Lava matra sadhu sanghe sarvasiddhi hoy. How in one moment all perfection is available. Because in one moment you take it to heart, you cultivate it. Of course, generally many of us we're new practitioners to spirituality. And therefore we may not be able to internalize a lot of the teachings in a deep sort of way. So we do require other support. So we do have other support in the form of Vaishnava Sangha, you know, in which we should make friendship with the Vaishnavas. And then in order to help us assimilate, you have someone that you can speak the philosophy to, someone who's junior to you, subordinate. And then you have your gurus who you can inquire from. Pranipata, Pranipashna, Seva. That is the duty of a disciple. Three things. Three things is duty. Pranipata, surrender. Pratiprashna, ask relevant questions and render service. Prabhupada said the only question he ever asked his guru is what service I can render. So then we'll say, well, we're not Srila Prabhupada and you know, that kind of line of thought. But what is our duty? What is their duty? So then these things have to be cleared up by hearing Shastra. What is duty of guru? Duty of guru is to do what? What is duty of guru? Michael? Huh? Yes, give spiritual enlightenment. Now, whether you take that or not is another question. Is that you have some problem? Guru says, Tamcha Chikusabharata. You may not like that answer. Just tolerate. Now let's talk about the philosophy, Karma Yoga next. And you're feeling mad that he didn't properly. So like this, we need to hear from Shastra, what is duty of guru, what is duty of disciple? Any other questions? So three questions Yamadutas asks. Now, answer is coming. Text number 11. Sri Bhadaraya Niruvacha. Oh, did you want to say something after? Iti Deva Sarapriṣṭa Praja Samyamano Yamaha Prita Swadhutam Pratyaha Smaran Padhambujam Hari. In question. So, translation. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, thus, having been questioned, Lord Yamaraj, the supreme controller of the living entities, was very pleased with his order carriers because of hearing from them the holy name of Narayana. He remembered the lotus feet of the Lord and began to reply. Purport. Srila Yamaraj, the supreme controller of the living entities, in terms of their pious and impious activities, was very pleased with his servants because they had chanted the holy name of Narayana in his dominion. Yamaraj had to deal with men who are all sinful, who can hardly understand Narayana. Consequently, when his order carriers uttered the name of Narayana, he was extremely pleased, for he is also a Vaishnava. Any questions? So he wasn't at all stumped by their questions or concern. People just have, oh, they said Narayana's name. Very nice. Because in his dominion, he's always hearing sinful, okay, send them to that hell, send them to that hell, send that one to this hell. Such a drag. You know, in one sense, like a drag of a service, isn't it? You just have to sit there and send people to hell of various types. This one, send them to Kumipaka, send this one to, you know, Mahirbhoja, whatever, different types of hells. So someone came, Narayana, oh, finally, you are my friend. You're reminding me of the lotus feet of the Lord. Understand? That's a friend means one who reminds you of lotus feet of Krishna. Huh? The Yamadutas. So will they go back to Vaikuntha? I don't know. That's not described here. But they said the name of Narayana, Yamaraj, very pleased because immediately he thought of Krishna. He was reminded of Krishna. That's called friend. This is when you become happy. Someone comes to you with so many problems, you should become despondent, yes, distressed. Usually we become enthusiastic. I will help solve everyone's problems, isn't it? There's always a lot of advice to be given by everyone. But when people come to us about reminding us of the Supreme Lord, we become tired. So I have to switch opposite way. When someone comes and reminds us of Narayana, we become blissful. Such Yamaraj is blissful. Okay.
Do the Vishnu Dutas only come in the case where people are going back to Godhead, or like if they may be going to heavenly planets, or do they just go by themselves, or how would that work in that circumstance?
Yes, generally for persons who are returning to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha Priya Darshanam, it's very rare to get the darshan of such types of personalities. We mentioned this word, Durlabho manusho deho dehinam kshanam pangura tatrapi durlabham manye vaikuntha priya darshanam. We mentioned this verse earlier. Durlabho manusho deho, human form of life, very rare to obtain, isn't it? You have to go through 8,400,000 species. That means one type of species is cat, but then within the cat category there's so many types. So you have to go through all those cat categories, then mammals. Finally, you get human form of life. Dehinam kshanam panguraha. At any moment, it may drop dead, isn't it? Although we don't think like that, any moment you can drop dead. Right now in the Bhava Song class, you'll be, finished. That would be auspicious, of course, but it can happen any moment. We don't think like that. Normally, we don't think like that. But any moment, dehinam kshanam panguraha. It is a rare attainment. At any moment, you can lose it. Tatrapi durlabham manye. But I think more rare than that, says King Nimi, I think more rare than this human form of life, Vaikuntha Priya Darshana, to get the darshan of such personalities who are destined for Vaikuntha Priya, dear to the Lord of Vaikuntha. So it is very rare if persons see such personalities. Generally, if you're going back home, back to Godhead, you get opportunity.
So if you're not like, let's say you're not going to hell, but you're not going back to Godhead, will the Yamadutas come and appear?
Well, not if you're chanting. Well, if you're not going to hell, why would the Yamadutas come? You'll get another body, though, like that.
Okay, so it's no visits. You just go to your next body if you like in the...
Yes, according to the order of the Supreme Lord, Karmana Daivane Chena, Supreme Lord make arrangement, transfer you to the next material body. Any other questions? So, Yamaraj is happy? Yes, wake up. Yamaraj is happy that he's been reminded of the lotus feet of Narayana. Next verse. Yama uvacha Purumadanyo jagatastastushyascha Otam protam patava yatra vishvam Yadam shutosya stiti janmanasha Nasyo tava yasya vashe chalokaha. Translation. Yamaraj said, my dear servants, you have accepted me as the Supreme, but factually I am not. Above me, and above all the other demigods, including Indra and Chandra, is the one Supreme Master and Controller. the partial manifestations of his personality of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, who are in charge of the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this universe. He is like the two threads that form the length and breadth of a woven cloth. The entire world is controlled by him, just as a bull is controlled by a rope and its nose. We don't see these things in America, but in India, you can see. So he says here, Paro Madanyo Jagatas Tastu Shascha. So they were thinking, Yamadurus were thinking that Yamaraj was the supreme controller of everyone, that one autocrat above all other smaller controllers. So Yamaraj is answering the first two questions in this verse. He is saying, Madanyo, that Paro Madanyo. So actually, there Anya means there is another. There is another who is Paroma. He is, Ma means me. There is another who is Paroma, who is superior to me, and who is the actual autocrat. Jagatas Tutushascha. He is the autocrat of all the living entities in the universe. All moving living entities, all non-moving living entities. There is another who is superior to me, who is the autocrat of all moving and non-moving living entities. Understand? That's the first line. Otam protam patava yatravishram. He is like the two threads that form the length and breadth of a woven cloth. Like a, I guess like a t-shirt or something. It's just threads woven lengthwise. With, right, this is length, right? Sorry, I wasn't good at math. Lengthwise and widthwise. That's all it is. These threads, our shirts, our clothes and so on. They're just threads woven lengthwise. Widthwise, isn't it? So he's saying Krishna is actually everything. Otam protam patava yatra vishram. Krishna is actually the threads of everything that exists, woven lengthwise, widthwise. Understand? So God is literally everything by dint of his energy being not different from him. So he is everything lengthwise, widthwise. Understand? Well, it'll be described and more detail coming up. But you get that point in a general sort of sense. God is everything. Understand? Yes. This is not my vibe though, but we believe this too. God is everything. Then, Yan Amshuto, by a portion of himself, he maintains the universe, creates it, and destroys it. That portion of himself is Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva. Brahma, Vishnu means super soul, and then Shiva, destroyer. By a portion of himself, he creates, he destroys, and maintains the universe. Then the last line says, it is just like a bull who is controlled by a rope in the nose. Everyone in this world is controlled, just as a bull is controlled by a rope in his nose. That point will be elaborated on in the next verse, and so we'll do the next verse also. Not now, and then that will be our discussion for the day. Understand? This is Krishna. Position. I am not the supreme. Understand? You made a mistake. Sorry. So the purport. The order carriers of Yamaraj suspected that there was a ruler even above Yamaraj. To eradicate their doubts, Yamaraj immediately replied, yes. There is one supreme controller above everything. Yamaraj is in charge of some of the moving living entities, namely the human beings. But the animals who also move are not under his control. Only human beings have consciousness of right and wrong, and among them, only those who perform sinful activities come under the control of Yamaraj. Therefore, although Yamaraj is a controller, he is only a departmental controller of a few living entities. A few means a lot, because a lot of living entities do sinful activities. A few living entities. There are other demigods who control many other departments, but above them all is one supreme controller, Krishna. Ishvaraha Parama Krishna. Sachit Ananda Vigraha. The supreme controller is Krishna. Others who control their own departments in the affairs of the universe are insignificant in comparison to Krishna, the supreme controller. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 7, Matta Paramtaram Nanyat Kinchin Asti Dhananjaya. Quote, my dear Dhananjaya Arjuna, no one is superior to me, end quote. Therefore, Yamaraj immediately cleared away the doubts of his assistants, the Yamadutas, by confirming that there is a supreme controller above all others. Understand? That first paragraph is just describing the first line of the verse. First line of the verse is the first paragraph. Prabhupada's elaborated on that. Next paragraph. Srila Madhavacharya explains that the words otam protam refers to the cause of all causes. The Supreme Lord is both vertical and horizontal to the cosmic manifestation. This is confirmed by the following verse from the Skanda Purana. Yata kanta pata sutra ota protash chasastitaha evam vishna vidham vishram otam protam chasamstitam. Like the two threads, horizontal and vertical, of which a quilt is manufactured, Lord Vishnu is situated as the vertical and horizontal cause of the cosmic manifestation. That means Krishna is everything. Everything we experience is Krishna. 2 seconds. So the first paragraph is easy. You got the first paragraph? Yamaraj says that there's a superior living entity to me who is the controller of all the moving and non-moving living entities. So Prabhupada's purport elaborated that Yamaraj is only the controller of some of the moving living entities. Understand? He's only the controller of those human beings, not the animals and the demigods, but those human beings, and out of the human beings, only those who perform acts in the mode of ignorance, sinful activities, passionate ignorance. So not of all the living entities that move, but only of some of them. Whereas Krishna is control of all the living entities, moving and non-moving. So that is the difference between me and Krishna. First point. There is one who is superior to me. He is the controller of everyone. Understand? That was the first paragraph, simply put. And then the second paragraph is the second line. Otam protam patava yatra vishram. Krishna is literally everything. Understand? God is everything. How do the Mayavadis understand that? They understand it by the same way. God is everything. Or everything is God. But the difference between Vaishnava conception and our Mayavad conception, God is everything only in the sense that His energy, which generates the moving and non-moving living entities, is a manifestation of His energy. And the energy is not different from the energetic source. Simple analogy we give many times, the sun and the sun ray, isn't it? So the sun ray is not different from the sun, isn't it? So when the sun ray is hitting your head, what do you say? Huh? You say the sun is hot, isn't it? But it's not that you're feeling the sun. If you're feeling the sun, finish. No more Bhakti Michael. Isn't it? You'll be finished. But the sun ray is touching your head, so you say the sun has done it, isn't it? Although it is just the energy of the sun, it is not the sun directly. Understand? Similarly, another example Prabhupada gives. Suppose I take a baseball bat and I hit you. Then I say, I did not hit you, the baseball bat hit you. Then, do you accept? Suppose I take baseball bat and I hit you in the head with it. And then you say, why did you hit me? I said, I did not hit you, baseball bat hit you. I was far away from your head, the bat did it. Will you accept? Huh? What do you say? What do you think? If I take baseball bat and hit you, what do you think? I hit you, isn't it? Because I use that energy, the baseball bat, to chastise you. So similarly, Krishna's energy is not different from him. Although simultaneously different, although the bat and the wielder of the bat are different, you still give credit to the wielder of the bat who hits you, who chastises you with the bat. So similarly, Krishna's energy is not different from him. Understand? So in that sense, everything is Krishna. This energy is saying here, Krishna is the horizontal and vertical threads of which a quilt is composed. This is referring to Krishna's prakriti, his energy. Sarva bhutani konteya prakritim yanti mamikam. By my prakriti, all living entities are generated at the beginning of creation, and at the end they are again brought back into me. By my prakriti. Prakriti shrama vashtabhya vishrajami puna puna. By my prakriti, I manifest again and again these material worlds. So this prakriti is coming from me, and therefore it is also me. There's a sense that the effect, the cause is inherent in the effect, right? It's called sakkaryavad. Where, in fact, doctors, when they're trying to deal with different diseases, for example, they try to understand what is the cause of the disease by looking at the effect. Because the effect is immediately available to them, right? The sick patient. That's the effect of the disease. So the effect is immediately available to them, and then they try to understand the cause by looking at the effect. Understand? So there's a sense that the cause is inherent in the effect. You need only find it out. Understand? So similarly, this is the effect of Krishna, this material existence. So he exists inside of it. The cause is there inside the effect. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina. Krishna pervades everything. We cannot see it because it's beyond the purview of the senses. So Krishna is everything. So this is the discussion Prabhupada gives in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam introduction about the difference between an Ishvara and an absolute truth. Understand? There's a difference between the Ishvara and the absolute truth. Ishvara means a controller. So there may be many controllers, but those controllers are not the absolute truth. Because what is the difference between a controller and the absolute truth? The absolute truth is everything. Understand? The absolute truth is everything. Whereas a controller may be the master of a particular situation, has a little control over a particular field of activities. But the absolute truth is everything. He's the controller of the field. He is the field also. He's the things that are taking place in that field. Absolute truth is literally everything, by dint of it being a manifestation of his energy. Understand? So Yamaraj is telling that I'm just a departmental controller. I'm an Ishvara, but I am not the absolute truth. Krishna is the absolute truth. So his control is so comprehensive, it's beyond me, you, or anyone else. Right? You understand? You can understand? Yes.
I was thinking that this tendency to think, due to our false ego, that whatever group we're part of, whoever our authority is the person with the highest realization, the highest understanding, the highest level of control or whatever. It's interesting because yesterday in St. Louis we saw there were people there from like the Sahaj Yoga group, and then there were people there from like some Egyptian thing. They had some big posters of some guy with a turban. They called him the spiritual world teacher or something like that. There are other groups there, and I'm wondering if is that just the way it is? Like living entities will become part of some group and think this is the highest understanding and this is the truth. And you know, I mean, there is an absolute truth, but then it seems like also people. I don't know how to understand this. Like, I guess people are just becoming part of these groups, and at some lifetime they'll realize maybe this wasn't the highest understanding. Or
yeah, Krishna discuss these things. Bhagavad Gita itself, he discusses these things. Yanti deva vrata devan, pichurin yanti pichur vrataha, bhutani yanti bhutegya, yanti maya jinopimaya. Those who worship in the mode of goodness, they get a situation in the mode of goodness. Those who worship in the mode of passion, they get a situation in the mode of passion. Those who worship in ignorance, they get ignorance, and those who worship me, they come to me. So Krishna's accommodated every type of worship in that one verse. Worship in passion, worship in goodness, worship in ignorance, and transcendental worship. These are the four types. And all of them are ultimately manifestations of Krishna. So in that sense, everyone is serving Krishna, directly or indirectly. You serve Krishna through Maya Shakti and the modes of nature, or you serve Krishna directly with transcendental faith according to the authorities of transcendence, acharyas and so on, guru, sat, sampradaya, etc. So everyone is following Krishna ultimately. And yes, it will be like that. Whatever someone is following, they think that is highest thing. Generally, that is like that. Someone in ignorance, he thinks this is the highest thing. Someone in passion thinks the same way, goodness thinks the same way. And those in transcendence, they're more neutral. That's kind of a difference that you see between transcendentalists and those who are under the modes of nature, including beginning practitioners of bhakti yoga. The transcendentalists are very neutral because they can see absolute truth is everyone is following things according to their adhikar and the modes of nature and so on. So when Krishna makes a point in Bhagavad Gita, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant. Of course, we should do that now in Kali Yuga because someone is following anything properly. But in the context of the verse, Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant who are doing fruitive activities, because they are following that path according to their adhikar. They're materialistic living entities. And so they're following a material path. According to their position, they're following something. So then, don't disturb their minds. So then, what you see amongst transcendentalists, those whose transcendental eye has been awakened, who may not even be perfected souls, they become very neutral. Someone goes and says, this is the highest thing, this is the best thing. They go, okay. That was a big deal. And then they go on chanting Hare Krishna. Someone is yelling at them, you know, if you don't worship this way, you go to hell. No, very nice. They're not going to get very disturbed by that. You know, when someone tells us we're going to hell, take the garland off, you know. You want to take this over here, you know, we become worked up because the motor passion comes up in our consciousness. You know, you want to take this outside. But another devotee who more his transcendental eyes been awakened, someone says you're going to hell, yeah, I agree with you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. The person become bewildered. I agree with you. I definitely deserve to go to hell. Undoubtedly. Huh? Yeah, undoubtedly. So, transcendentalists, you see, they manifest neutrality when it comes to material nature. Just as Krishna manifests neutrality when it comes to material nature. Somoham sarvabhuteshu namedvishu sinapriya. Krishna is very neutral when it comes to material nature. Yebhajanti tumam bhakti. If you have bhakti, then his attention is aroused. Same with Vaishnavas also. As far as material nature is concerned, it's kind of like a neutrality in terms of people's concepts and ideas and convictions and so on. They can categorize it. This is mode of passion, this is mode of ignorance, like that. And they don't really get worked up over it. They just say for what it is, this is mode of passion, this is mode of ignorance. This is transcendental. Oh, this person wants to hear something, then let me speak to him. This person doesn't want to hear, he wants to argue, so let him, mode of passion, take over like that. This person wants to hear something, oh, I'll speak to him. Krishna consciousness. Of course, we have our duties of trying to enlighten the, you know, benighted masses, but the devotee will do that as a service to Krishna. It's not like he's so concerned about the suffering of the conditioned souls so much where he also comes in the mode of passion and ignorance in order to convince them. Be more neutral.
Just by being a person or trying to be someone with exemplary character.
I can't understand you.
All right. Is it necessary, like, to focus so much on the preaching aspects? Like, if that's not your nature? Because I know sometimes we like to get into these big philosophical soliloquies about the, you know, different aspects of devotion, and we talk to devotees and people who are not in the temple, but sometimes that can be like a distraction from like just focusing on the more practical aspects of just hearing and just trying to chant. And
no, we do both.
You know,
our nature is to serve the Supreme Lord. That is our nature. Everyone is serving Krishna, understand? Everyone is serving Krishna right now. Everyone in the city of Chicago is serving Krishna right now, understand? That is our nature, to serve Krishna, understand? We either serve Krishna under the internal potency or the external potency. Understand? But everyone is serving Krishna. So our nature is to render service to Krishna. We're either doing that in knowledge or in ignorance. Most people in ignorance. So our nature is to serve Krishna. So then we have to find out, what is it that Krishna wants from us? Understand? What is it that Krishna wants? Not that this is not my nature, that's not my nature. What does Krishna want from me? Because my nature is to serve him. Everyone is serving Krishna. So what is it that Krishna wants from me? That has to be found out. How you will find out what Krishna wants from you? How you will find out what Krishna wants from you? You ask. Usually Guru is the connection. The Guru tells you, I want you to do this. Disciple says, this is what Krishna wants from me. So if Guru says, I want you to preach something, then you try. Whether it is according to your conditioned nature or not is irrelevant. Because our real nature is to serve Krishna. We have to find out what is it Krishna wants from me. And Sant Sampradaya Guru tells. So then you follow. Understand? Understand? Yeah, so it is both. We are in service to Guru. Suppose Guru says, I want you to do surgery on so-and-so in the future. Then you have to learn surgery, isn't it? So if we have to preach, that means we have to learn the Siddhanta properly. So both have to go on side by side. I'm learning what is proper thing so I can serve my spiritual master's requests properly. It's not really one or the other. I mean, I could take it in a deeper sort of sense, but that's good enough. Understand? Everyone understanding these simple points? Krishna consciousness is simple. We're going to do one more verse. Understand? I know you're suffering, but that's okay. Suffer more. That's how the purification comes. One more verse, because the next verse describes the last line of this shloka. about the bull being controlled by a rope in the nose. Yonamabir vachi janam nijayam badnati tantram ivadhama bhirgha yasmai balimta ime nama karma nibhandha bhadhash chakita vahanti. Yes, everyone's bound up. Just as a driver of a bullock cart ties ropes through the nostrils of his bulls to control them, the Supreme Personality of Godhead binds all men through the ropes of his words in the Vedas, which set forth the names and activities of all the distinct orders of human society, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. In fear, the members of these orders, all worship the Supreme Lord by offering presentations according to their respective activities. Understand? So we heard Yamadutas asked the question, there may be many smaller controllers to govern many fruitive workers, but there has to be one law in which all those controllers are functioning under. Understand? So what is that one law? One law is the Vedas. Everyone is being controlled by the Vedic conjunctions, which gives nama karma. Nama means it gives certain names of people's positions. This is your position, this is your position, this is your position. And along with those identified positions come your duties. Understand? First there's the nama. Nama means this. You are the temple president. You are the Sankirtan leader. You are the temple commander. You are the cook. You are the head pujari. These are all the various names. They help us to distinguish what are the various departments, understand? And then within those departments, these are your duties. The temple president's duty is this, temple commander's duty is that, head pujari's duty is this, karma, understand? Narma, karma. So the Vedas would tell what are the different positions of people and what are their subsequent duties they are to perform according to those positions, understand? And everyone is controlled by those laws, either as a free civil citizen or as a prisoner. So one would say, I do what I want. I do as I like. You can do that from prison cell. Everywhere, either you follow the law of the state as a free citizen, or you follow the law of the state in prison, isn't it? If you break the law. If you say, I will not follow, I'll do what I like, that's okay. You may say like that and do like that also, but you won't be doing like that for very long. Understand? You'll be having to follow from prison. So everyone, in other words, everyone is bound by these laws. So they either follow it voluntarily after getting proper knowledge, or they don't follow it and they get severe reactions for not doing so in this life and the next. So everyone's bound up just as the bull is bound up by the nose, by the driver of the bullock cart. Understand? Everyone understanding these points? Simple point, yeah.
One question, Prabhupada. So we hear that there are three levels or three kinds of consciousness you can have while performing any activity. In fear, on the platform of duty, and out of love. So in this verse, he's saying, in fear, all of them are acting. So I just wanted to...
In fear, everyone is acting. First of all, speaking not of transcendence here so much. But yes, fear is there pervading all the forms. Even in love, there is fear. But here, in context, the fear means that if I don't follow the law, then there will be consequences of doing so. And therefore, they're all offering... they're all offering him presentations according to their respective activities. That means they're all performing their duties nicely, out of fear of the consequences of not doing so. Understand? Yes, there is fear is there. Out of fear of not doing so. A person who does things out of fear alone is motive ignorance. Someone does something out of hope for gain, that's motive passion. Someone does something out of dharma, duty, that is motive goodness. Someone does something out of love, that is transcendence. But in all of them, fear will be there. Understand? Fear is just the predominating quality of one in the mode of ignorance. And passion, there is fear of not getting their results for their fruitive endeavors. In dharma, there is fear of not setting proper example. There is fear of the consequences and how that can impact the society. And in transcendence, there is fear of not pleasing the beloved. So fear is there everywhere. Understand? There's fear in the spiritual world too. Fear of not pleasing the beloved is there in transcendence. So, but in context of this particular verse, you mentioned that that's from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Shikshamrita. But in context of this particular statement, it's just saying here that out of fear of the consequences, basically, of not doing so, they offer presentations to the Supreme Lord. How? By performing their dharmas nicely. Nama karma. Understand? Nibandha bhadash. Everyone bound up. Understand? You either bound up as a free citizen or as a prisoner. Which one you want to be? Free citizen or prisoner? You don't know? You want to be free citizen or prisoner? Free citizen? Free citizen? What about you? You say, I guess. Well, you can try the... It is. Because we had not fallen nice in Kali Yuga, so we're suffering. But this is the point. Understand? Commentary. This is the last verse. In this material world, everyone is conditioned regardless of who he is. Understand? Regardless of who he is. One may be a human being, a demigod, or an animal, tree, or plant, but everything is controlled by the laws of nature, and behind this natural control is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed by Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 10, wherein Krishna says, Maya dhyakshena pakritihi suyate sacharacharam. Quote, the material nature is working under my direction and producing all moving and non-moving beings. Thus, Krishna is behind the natural machine which works under his control. Understand? The law that is controlling everyone, who is the lawmaker? That's Krishna. So Krishna is controlling everyone. Apart from other living entities, a living being in the human form of body is systematically controlled by the Vedic injunctions in terms of the divisions of Varna and Ashrama. A human being is expected to follow the rules and regulations of Varna and Ashrama, otherwise he cannot escape punishment by Yamaraj. The point is that every human being is expected to elevate himself to the position of a Brahmana, the most intelligent man, and then one must transcend that position to become a Vaishnava. This is the perfection of life. The Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra can elevate themselves by worshipping the Lord according to their activities. Sway sway karmani birata samsidhim labhate naraha. That's from the Bhagavad Gita. The divisions of Varna and Ashram are necessary to ensure the proper execution of duties and peaceful existence for everyone, but everyone is directed to worship the Supreme Lord, who is all-pervading. Yena sarvam idam tatam. Understand, that's a very important point. Why all these rules are given? So that society can be peaceful and progressive. Understand? If you don't have rules, you don't have a peaceful and progressive society. Understand? But in whatever position you're in the society, everyone is directed to worship the Supreme Lord for transcending their position. But because we all have different natures and different qualities, we have to work together to have a functioning system. Understand? Just like the body, you have so many different limbs. Suppose all the limbs did the same function, then problem, isn't it? If all the limbs did the same activity, then you have a problem, isn't it? Major problem. If all the limbs, suppose all the limbs acted like feet, then problem. So you have different limbs, they have different functions, but they work together to keep up the maintenance of the body, isn't it? So people have their different natures in society, and there are rules given to those different natures for the peacefulness of the society and for the progress of the society. But everyone is directed to worship the Supreme Lord to transcend their particular position eventually. Understand? A very important point. The Supreme Lord exists, continuing the purport, the Supreme Lord exists vertically and horizontally, otam protam, and therefore if one follows the Vedic injunctions by worshipping the Supreme Lord according to one's ability, his life will be perfect. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, chapter 2, verse 13, Ata pumbir dvija shreshta varnashrama vibhagashaha sanushti tascha dharmasya samsidhir haritoshanam. Quote, O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties, dharma, according to the caste divisions and orders of life, is to please the Lord Hari. So whatever position you are in this world, our main idea is to worship Krishna, samsidhir haritoshanam, please Krishna. You may be the so-called Brahmin, so-called Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, whatever your position, so-called rascal nonsense, or actually called rascal nonsense. And in any position, our business is to please Krishna. The Varnashram Institution offers the perfect process for making one eligible to return home back to Godhead, because the aim of every Varna and Ashram is to please the Supreme Lord. One can please the Lord under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, and if one does so, his life is perfect. The Supreme Lord is worshipable, and everyone worships him directly or indirectly. Understand? Directly worship, because we have knowledge, or indirectly in ignorance, but everyone's worshiping God. Those who worship him directly get the results of liberation quickly, whereas the liberation of those who serve him indirectly is delayed. The words Namabir, Vachi are very important. In the Varnashram institution, there are different names: Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. The Vak or Vedic injunctions give directions for all these divisions. Everyone is expected to offer obeisances to the Supreme Lord and perform duties as indicated in the Vedas. So this verse is Yamaraj expanding on the point of how Krishna is the supreme autocrat behind everyone, all controllers, and all entities in general. He is the supreme controller of everything. How does he control people? By the sound vibration of the Vedas, which tell these are the various positions, these are the various duties. You must act according to your position, otherwise you suffer consequences. That's how he controls all living entities in this world. And that control is ultimately for their elevation. It is not like it's not like despotism. Despot means one who just lords it over you for his own exploitation program. You don't like that very much, isn't it? Someone is lording over you. It's like a bully. He comes and you're about to take your lunch, and he just takes your lunch bag and walks off, and you can't do anything about it because he's bigger than you. It is like that. That's despotism. Krishna is not like that. He's giving so many rules, regulations, first of all, so we don't destroy each other, so that there's proper duties governing how we can interact with each other to be peaceful and to be progressive. And ultimately, those rules will help us transcend. So in this way, Yamaraj is explaining, everyone is actually controlled. Yamadutas asks three questions. Who is the supreme controller? Is one of them. So he's described, it is Krishna. And he is the supreme controller how? By providing the laws in which everyone is bound up to follow. Otherwise, they suffer consequences. Understand? And within that control, there is injunction to worship the Supreme Lord, Hari. And by that worship of the Supreme Lord, under the guidance of proper authority, you transcend the material nature altogether. Prabhupada's bringing out that point also. Understand? Can you understand all these points? Yes. So we should worship the Supreme Lord, Hari. This is it. Yeah, final question.
This is just a clarification on the question that Terence Prabhu asked, that, you know, people who are sinful are taken care of by Yamadutas, and people who are going back to Godhead are taken care of by the Vishnudutas. But maybe, I'm just asking for clarification. Maybe it is safe to assume that there are personalities involved when we transition to other places also, because, nothing happens.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in chapter 8 speaks about persons who are going to higher realms, how there are various devatas who help them along on their path to these higher realms in the material world. That is also mentioned. It is also mentioned that when one's material body is ready for you, then immediately when your next body is ready for you, then immediately this body is finished and the soul is transferred to the next material body, by the arrangement of the super soul, karmena, daiva, netrena, various points. Super soul is there governing everything ultimately. He's the ultimate doer behind everything.
And then there is also this verse where it is mentioned that the subtle body carries the soul to the next body.
Yes.
How do we?
Yeah, the subtle body, under the injunction or guidance of the Supreme Lord, yes. It's not happening randomly or by a mechanism. There is guidance behind everything in this material world. The super soul is the guiding factor. Yes. Any other questions or comments?
A Vaishnava and a Brahmana?
Huh?
You said you got to elevate to Vaishnava.
Yes, a brahmana generally refers to one who is in the mode of goodness. And he has certain qualities like he's tolerant, he's simple, he's religious, he practices self-realization. Krishna mentions so many qualities in the Bhagavad Gita. It means a person who's in the mode of goodness. And then Vaishnava means one who's transcended all the modes of material nature. A brahmachari is, like, we're called as brahmacharis, which is really a concession. A brahmachari means celibate student life. It refers to celibate student life. Yes, that's our ISKCON term for the newbies. You're just a bhakta. Well, it's actually a compliment. To be a bhakta is a very exalted thing, actually. Brahmachari means a student celibate life. So that usually in the varnashram culture, that takes place from the age of 5 to 25, when one lives in the ashram with his guru and gets trained up how to be a human being. Because everyone is born an animal, understand? Everyone here is born an animal. We were all animals before Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Yes. All we cared about was four things: eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Isn't it? Even now, but it's gotten a little bit under control because we live in the ashram. So that is, first 25 years, you need training how to be human being. That's called brahmachari. Get off the animal platform, learn how to be a human being. Then after 25 years of age, this is roughly speaking, Prabhupada gives this type of division. After 25 years of age, you may decide you want to get married because we don't have sufficient realization that the mundane rasa is not very, useful. So you get married at the age of 25. From 25 to 50, you're called as a grihasta. Grihasta means a householder. He has a house, and he worships Krishna in that house and tries to make further spiritual advancement. Then after 50 years of age, after he's done all his duties, taking care of children and all that, and kind of realize that there's nothing in the mundane rasa, especially he's old, senses are useless, and so on, then he takes vanaprastha. Vanaprastha literally means one who goes to the forest. And he performs severe austerities for dedicating his life to really realizing the self and God and so on. And then finally, he may go with the wife or he may not go with the wife. If the relationship with the wife was very spiritual, devotional, he takes the wife along. If not, then they go their separate ways to cultivate Krishna consciousness. And then after 60 years of age or so, he becomes completely renounced. It's called a sannyasi. This is all within the Varnashram institution. Understand? And so a mode of goodness sorts of lifestyle. Then, but outside of this mode of goodness living, one has to also become transcendental, Vaishnava. Understand? So there's a distinction between the two. We are aspiring Vaishnavas, not quite there yet. Understand? Any other questions? Okay. So tomorrow I'll ask what are the three questions and what answer that we give today. First two questions were answered today. Two verses, we answered the first two questions. I'll ask tomorrow in the beginning of class, what are the three questions, what answer? See, so you can meditate on that. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yes, well, the first question is who's giving?